This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with The Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
I have a very high expectation of what I've always thought this franchise is, and that was the best franchise in sports.
In the moments where we are down, as players, we got to execute. Every day, I'm so fortunate to be a part of this team.
This is 49ers Plus Minus.
Hey, everybody, Tim Kawakami here for 49ers Plus Minus. I just got back from 49ers locker room availability. Kyle Shanahan availability. He's fighting through traffic just to sweat and churn and get myself in front of this in time to get make sure that Matt Barrows' schedule is kept perfectly in sync. I don't want to mess. I know the fear that I have that if I should mess up Matt Barrows, I just don't want that. Barrows, we got this off in time. Well, kind of 5 minutes delayed, but kind of in time.
I appreciate the hustle on this, but yeah, 5 minutes later than you said you would. So It's gonna go in your file.
I'm gonna have hell to pay for that. When you delay Matt Barrows, there's hell to pay. I should have like driven in the on the curb or something through the streets of San Francisco to get here on time. All right, 49ers Packers Saturday divisional round. 49ers first playoff game after a bye. We've been in that locker room, get a feel for it. Now that it's the last time we're gonna see him, last time you saw him in a practice field, what's the vibe on the 49ers?
I mean, I think it's a really confident vibe. You know, they wanted that number one seed for a reason. They got it. They earned it. And I think that they took advantage of it as well as they could with some really intense practices last week and this week. And I think it was beneficial that the last team that they practiced for, the Rams, play a similar style of offense to the Packers. And then when the 49ers had their kind of interest squad scrimmage last week, they were playing an offense that's similar to the Packers. So they've really been, you know, preparing for this type of offense for a while now. You know, they talk about eye discipline and all the motions that the Shanahan offense that the Packers also use works with. So, I mean, all that stuff, they should be well versed with it anyway. And they just sharpened in the last, 14 to really 20 days as well. And the other thing that jumps out is that their approach is the polar opposite to the Packers' approach. The Packers barely practiced this week. They didn't practice at all on Tuesday.
Short week too. Yeah, short week for them.
Two short weeks in a row for them. So they had very half-speed practices on Wednesday and Thursday. So it's really a contrast and opposites as far as how these teams are going into the playoffs. And, you know, I mean, you could say positives for both approaches. I mean, the 49ers used this approach that the Packers are using in previous years, and they did really well. They got hot. They stayed hot. They didn't overthink it. That's sort of what the Packers' mindset is. The 49ers have had a lot of time to think, a lot of time to prepare, a lot of time to rest up. And so that's what makes it interesting on Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, it just seems pretty clear. We're always talking about the Packers offense because the Packers offense is the only way they can really win this game, right? They got to get this into a shootout. I don't see them stopping the 49er offense, even if Purdy isn't great early. Like, remember, he wasn't great early in the, you know, in the Seattle playoff game last year. I think he's better than that now. I think he admitted there was a little bit of nerves going into that one as a rookie, you know, in his sixth NFL start, a little different now. I just don't see how the Packers defense, which was a bad statistical defense, which gave up a million yards to the Cowboys. I know a lot of it was in garbage time, but still, those plays were there. Boom, 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 boom. This has got to be a shootout if the Packers are in it. I would imagine you would agree with that. And do you think the Packers can get this into a shootout? Shootout is the word.
Yeah, I mean, I think that something I heard a lot in the locker room this week is how well the Packers are running the ball. And so that lays the foundation for their offense. And obviously it's something that Shanahan values and his offense is predicated on. And that's been a theme as well, is that this year, finally, without Aaron Rodgers, the Shanahan disciple, Matt LaFleur, is finally running a Shanahan offense. He's finally running that offense with and doing all the things that offense calls for, which is a healthy balance between run and pass. And so I think that the 49ers were impressed with Aaron Jones and how they ran the ball in the second half against the Cowboys. The 49ers, again, the 49ers defense is well-versed in stopping that offense, or at least knowing what the approach is. And the linebackers are way better than the Cowboys. And probably the defensive linemen, the edge setters, are more disciplined in it as well. But it's a question going into this game. The other factor that could even things is a storm that comes through. And boy, that weather prediction has been dancing around Saturday. I mean, it seems very confident that it's going to rain on Friday and it's going to rain on Sunday and Monday. But Saturday has been off and on as far as the prediction. Right now, as we're talking, it's supposed to rain and rain during the game. So how heavy it rains, does that affect Purdy? Does that lead to turnovers? That's another avenue, obviously, by which a weaker opponent can keep a game closer.
Yeah, the more random it is, the more chance the Packers are going to have. You know, turnover, a bad bounce, missed field goal, a kick return for a touchdown, which, you know, the 49ers might be a little bit exposed to, given what we've seen from their coverage units. I'm going to write a little bit about this. I've just been curious because Shanahan kind of brags that he's never called fake punt as a coach. And then I asked him about it today. He goes, I did call it once, year two, and it was called off. And he didn't even know there was a check out of it. But he went on to talk about it. It's like, you know, he just doesn't feel like he needs to or wants to trick teams. Like there's the predominance of what they do. We do our thing. And let's not screw up our thing. And our thing is usually good enough to win, especially like, that's what I think, like a divisional round game against a 7 seed that doesn't have a very good defense. If you try to outsmart yourself, you try to trick it up, and not saying that the Cowboys did, although maybe they did. If you're just the better team, if you're the more physical team, if you got the better players, don't fuck it up. And I do believe, and that's, you know, kind of what Kyle said. I've been saying this, you know, I was reading his mind in the past saying, why doesn't he call fake punts? But that's what it is. My guys can beat your guys. That doesn't mean they can't throw a halfback pass if you're overplaying the run like the Rams were in the game in L.A. last year. That's when you throw the halfback pass. Or, you know, you might do some end-around stuff. That's just part of the offense. Fake punts, fake field goals. Those just aren't in the Kyle Shanahan arsenal. Now if he does one, that's all on me. If he calls one in this game, you can, and it screws up, that's on me. But it's just not the way they do it. And I just think it's particularly well set up for a team in this situation. Well rested, great players. A lot of their injured guys are back. We'll get into that in a little bit. But I'm going to use that as a kind of way into the way Kyle Shanahan thinks, the way the 49ers play, and why they're really well set up to win this game. Well, let's go to the injuries. The key stuff, Armstead, back, Barrows for sure. I mean, who else? What are the other notable kind of guys that the 49ers are getting back?
Well, getting back, yeah, Armstead is a key one. George Odom, I think, is going to be a key one. He's, you know, their special teams ace, and also he's a backup safety. They've had all sorts of injuries at safety, and that depth has been thinned out a lot, especially the second half of the season. So those two are big. I don't know if Eric Armstead is going to be back. It might be too much to ask a guy who missed, what was it, six games? To be back all of a sudden. But he's not listed at all on the injury report. He says he's feeling well. He is their best run stopper in the middle, somebody that they've missed at times. They missed him big time against the Ravens on Christmas night. So that's a big deal. It's a big deal against this team. Eric Armstead not only is really strong, he's smart, and he knows what offenses are trying to do. So I think that's a big deal. The one that, you know, should concern 49ers fans is Dre Greenlaw, just kind of lingering on this practice injury report, even after a long spate of rest. It just underscores that he's been really nicked up this season. And we've all seen that. I mean, he just hasn't looked like Dre Greenlaw at times this year. And he's dealing with Achilles tendonitis. That obviously doesn't go away after a couple or almost 3 weeks of rest, and he's questionable. He's going to play in this game, but whether he plays like 2019 Dre Greenlaw, I think that's a pretty big doubt right now. And that's you know, that's a big deal. We're talking about linebacker play. We're talking about stopping the run. We're talking how the 49ers distinguish themselves over the Cowboys and some other teams in the NFC. It's their linebacker duo. And right now, one of those linebackers has not been 100% for a big chunk of the season.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Yeah, I don't know if that's totally necessary for this game, but yeah, that next one, if they get the Lions, say, and you got Jahmyr Gibbs, you got to chase down, or you've got, you know, LaPorta coming across the middle. If he's healthy and he's banged up, you need those linebackers. And Dre Greenlaw at his best is a super, super important player for the 49ers. It's definitely something to watch. Definitely thought he was banged up even when he's been, when he's been playing. He just hasn't looked 100% out there. So we shall see. Anybody else? Jair Brown, you wrote about. He's back. So, that, you know, a rookie, but who has been pretty important for this team. You know, when they start going too far deep into the safety thing, you get a little worried on the back end. He certainly hasn't had, like, mistakes as a safety, as a rookie. Is he like, plop right back in? You think there's going to be any little, like, transition period for him in the, you know, in the playoffs?
I don't think so. I mean, the key with him is that he's able to play basically all the safety spots. I mean, he can play deep. He can play up around the line of scrimmage. And moving him into Sean Gibson, you know, one guy's the free safety on one play, then the other guy's the free safety on the next. I mean, that's been really the post bye week key to this defense, is that not only have they married their pass rush and their coverage better, they've been doing a lot more disguises with that back. It's really the back seven. Mm-hmm. The back seven can give you a look before the snap. And then right after the snap, all seven players, linebackers and defensive backs, have moved. That's what flummoxed Trevor Lawrence in Jacksonville the game after the bye. And that's, you know, I haven't watched enough Jordan Love to determine whether he's the second coming or whether he's still a young quarterback in terms of starts. But you know, if this game got out of hand, I think it's going to be because that that secondary, that back seven, is really kind of confusing him, which they've done well throughout the year. And they've done really well against inexperienced quarterbacks. I'm not exactly sure where Jordan Love, who's been in the league for a while, just hasn't been a starter for a while, sort of falls into that. But could be an area where a short week for the Packers, not a lot of practice for the Packers, could come into play.
Just on the Packer question, Jair Alexander, have you heard about what's his status going in this game? Pretty important player for them.
Yeah, he had a pick against the Cowboys. He's questionable for this game, but obviously beat up. So one of these guys that is, dragging himself onto the field, that definitely could come into play. The 49ers are certainly the more rested and the more healthy of the two teams.
Yeah, I was in there a couple times this week, and it was the typical, very lively, bouncy 49ers locker room. Again, that doesn't always mean everything, but we saw how they came off the bye earlier this season, just like a rocket ship. Kind of feel might be some of that in this game. I think this is a game that suits them very well on rest. They kind of been watching everyone else play. Them and the Ravens are watching everyone else play, and I think they're looking at each other. And let's say, let's go. I just can't see how the 49ers come out flat. That's not who they are, right? Sometimes they're tired. Sometimes they're hurt. They very rarely look flat. And certainly in the Shanahan era, they haven't looked flat at all in the early rounds of the playoffs, undefeated unless it's the conference championship round or the Super Bowl. So, Barros, you're going to make a pick on this. I'm sure it's going to come out in tomorrow's Athletic or whatever, but what do you got?
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you. I mean, this is a veteran team that's done really well after breaks. I think that Christian McCaffrey is just going to kind of come out in this game like a champagne cork. I mean, he's rested. This is the one missing sort of element in his professional career so far. I think he's going to be great. And, that's going to the Packers defense is going to have its handful. I mean, again, I don't know. I'm going to be writing about the Levi's Stadium field. I think that story is going to run Saturday. And the 49ers have never been more proud of their field than they are now. They've got all sorts of new gizmos and contraptions to make it perfect. And it should be able to handle this rain that's coming. That's the only thing that I think can kind of sidetrack this offense on Saturday.
Slosh around a story on a natural grass field, Barros. That's dear to my heart. That's when dialed up for me, Barros.
I learned about rhizomes and cutting lengths and angle of the sun and grow lights and photosynthesis. I learned so much this week about grass. I'm only going to put a fraction of that into the story.
You got to become a gardener now. You got to work on that in your backyard or something. You got to turn this into something practical.
Too much work. Too thankless.
You're going to write about it. All right, Barros. I asked for some people to ask if they had any questions for us on the site formerly known as Twitter. I think we got some good ones. I was taking a look. I saw some really interesting ones. Barros, you're in charge of pulling them out. Let's answer some questions.
Yeah, you asked, and they delivered. Here's one that I think you'll find interesting. This is from Bruce. He says, "How come Debo always seems annoyed around the media?" And that's a very good perception, Bruce, because I think it's right. And Tim, do you have any thoughts on Debo and his annoyance with the media?
Yeah, it's often directed at me, I think, sometimes, which is fine. I just think he doesn't have much patience for kind of the way we ask questions or just the atmosphere of it. He can be very good, not at length, but pithy, kind of to the point. But he doesn't, there's some kind of questions he just doesn't want to answer. And he doesn't, he's confident enough that he doesn't feel like he has to, oh, I'll just slide off it and say something just to make you happy that really isn't anything. He doesn't want to talk about it. He's not going to talk about it, period. He's going to look to the next person. He is somebody who does not suffer fools in his mind. And I don't think a lot of these questions are foolish, but if he doesn't think it's worth his time, he lets you know it's not worth his time. That's fine. That's all we have. Listen, just be there. And if you don't want to answer it, don't answer it. I don't know that he loves the ritual of it. I'll put it that way. Of their star players, Debo is the one who has least amount of patience for the ritual of talking to the media, even once a week in the locker room.
Well, there's a reason his nickname is Debo and not Sunshine or Cuddles. I mean, that's who this guy is. And I remember I did a story on him 2 years ago where I talked to his mom, and she referred to him, you know, in the very long interview I had with her as Tyson. I mean, his given name. So she doesn't like Debo as a name, because she says that there's a very sweet, loving side of him, which is his real name. And then Debo is this sort of alter ego. And we've seen that in the past with Terrell Owens versus T.O. and things like that. So I think some of it is that, I think that he does like the attention. And sometimes when, you know, he doesn't have the reporters around him asking him questions, I think that bothers him a little bit too. I mean, all of these guys have egos. But you're right. I mean, he doesn't suffer fools, and he gets very short sometimes with people.
He's wary of things. Like if you just try to go up and chat with him, he's not that interested in it. Like, what are you doing here? Right. It's just like, there's a clear line between him and the media, and there's some people he likes better than others. Some he likes less than others. And it's not a point where it's just like where he feels like this is an interaction that's that important to him. And that's all right. He's like, he does go up there. He does talk at times, and he, you know, he's not biting your head off. It's just not the most pleasant thing in the world for him, which is just fine.
It's fine.
Next question.
Another receiver question. Do we have any idea if/how the 49ers plan to sign Brandon Ayuk to an extension? Do we think the decision has already been made, or is it fluid enough to be impacted by this playoff run? What do you think about
that? Well, who sent that question? Let's give him the credit.
Izzo Quest. I don't know if that's his real name, but that's his handle. Izzo Quest.
You and I have talked about this a little bit. I think they are re-signing Brandon Ayuk. We don't know the price tag. It's going to be very high. We know that he made All-Pro this year, did not make Pro Bowl, but we know what Shanahan thinks of him. We know that if they don't have him, the first thing they're going to have to do is try to find another one. Well, that's not easy. I don't think they're going to have to divert money to Chase Young as people in the beginning thought when they acquired Chase Young. I just think it's such an important position in the Shanahan offense. Shanahan coaches receivers. It's hard for him to find the one that he really likes. And what have we said? The chemistry with Brock Purdy is just there. Ayuk and Purdy. You're going to have to find the money for him. And if it means that, you know, maybe Debo isn't long for this team, maybe one more year of Debo. If it means that they have to try to find other ways, or maybe, you know, guys have to take pay cuts, possibly George Kittle. I'm not reporting this. Don't aggregate me. But I think Ayuk's kind of rise up the ladder on the offensive hierarchy is clear, and they're going to reward him for it if he wants to stay, and I think he'd want to stay.
Yeah, just think of how long it takes Kyle Shanahan to groom a wide receiver to his liking. That is an arduous process.
He's had one, right? One pure wide receiver that he really likes in this whole time, Debo being a different kind of player.
Right. But so there's that. So it's not like you could draft somebody and immediately replace Brandon Ayuk. The way that they thought that they could when they traded DeForest Buckner, they said, oh, we'll just use our first round pick on a defensive tackle. Wide receiver would be 10 times harder to do. The other point is that they don't have anybody in the chute. They drafted Danny Gray in the third round last year or in 2022. And Gray just went back on IR. I mean, they opened his 3-week practice window to activate him. They didn't activate him over that span, which means that he's done. He can't even practice with the team anymore. So that kind of shows you the gains that he's made in 2 years, not much. Ronnie Bell, I think, is going to be part of this team for a while, but, not starter level. I know that you in particular have been down on Ronnie Bell in recent weeks, yes. But I mean, and that's it. I mean, that's, you're talking about youth on this team. Tay Martin is on the practice squad and has been there for 2 years. I think that's probably the limit that he's going to reach So I do think that they could draft a wide receiver this year, but again, it's going to take a while for whoever comes in to sort of reach the level, the expectation level that they have for that position, and to come even close to Ayuk. It might be a might be a pipe dream at this point.
Yeah, there is one way you can always fit guys on the cap. That's if you are willing to guarantee them a lot of money that can squeeze down the initial cap hits, as we've seen them do. And, you know, can they in their minds think, we know for sure we're going to get 4 good years out of Brandon Ayuk? That is the equation they make. You know, they've done this with Fred Warner or with Trent Williams or with George Kittle. It's basically, can we get 3 or 4? That's the mindset, because if it doesn't work in 2, we're in trouble. I think with Brandon Ayuk, they would feel very confident saying we can get 4 years out of him. We can guarantee him $75 million or whatever it would count. That's how you do it, and you fit him in a cap. You have to guarantee them large money. Jed York has to pay that money. Trent Williams has been very clear. We know that's how you do it. This ownership has been willing to step up with the guaranteed money. I think with Brandon Ayuk, what else does he need to do to be worth it? He's done everything possible.
And we heard Shanahan sing his praises today about the Pro Bowl and how it was a ripoff that he didn't make that.
Nick, how you sounded pissed about that.
He was. Yeah. He was. I'm sure there were a couple of, Kyle, does a good job of knowing who's good in the league and who's not, especially on defense, obviously. So I forget the phrase he used. Did he say that the Pro Bowl was a joke?
Yep. Yeah. For lack of a better word, .. And usually they'll be like, okay, whatever. Joke.
It's a joke, right. All right. Well, speaking of talent and finding talent, this is from DJ Griff, who asked about, it's sort of an overlooked topic, given that the 49ers are playing this big game, but he asked about Adam Peters. He says, when we're looking back at the current roster, how much of it is due to Peters? Adam Peters, now the GM of the Washington Commanders.
It's a good question. And you might have a better sense of this. I think a lot of those late round picks, which have been so valuable to the 49ers, I would generally think it would be a guy with his head down in the film room with the contacts, the scout, which Peters' reputation is. Whether that's Dre Greenlaw in the 5th round, that's Juwan Jennings, 7th round, right? Mm-hmm. That level of player, which are so important to this team, I would say Peters, or another, could it be his other scouts, but he kind of ran that group. If I had to credit him with players, it would be of that level. There's a lot of layers of deep, Burford, if you can, like that's been a player that's given them a lot of value. I just think those kinds of players I would generally credit to Peters. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, for sure. I remember sitting down with him and talking about Talano Hufanga, for example.
That's a good one. That's a real good
fifth rounder who didn't do very well at the combine. But I always thought that Peters did a great job of this, was getting everybody's opinion on players, assistant coaches and the area scouts and all that. And to a man, everybody loved Hufanga, despite very average, 40 time and things like that. So they went around the room on day 3 of that draft and said, and Peters asked them to stand up and say, okay, who's one player you'd love to see us drafting on this, the final day of the draft? And Hufanga got a lot of votes from a lot of different people. And so ends up on the 49ers. It ends up being a great story, but I think you're absolutely right. And I don't think that there's any overstating the importance of having been here since 2017, coming in with Kyle and with that coaching staff and knowing the types of players that they like. And so I know that they got George Kittle that year, but a lot of these guys they got in recent years. And I think there's a real value to knowing the coaching staff really well and figuring out, this guy's going to work with this staff and this guy isn't. And I think they've done a really excellent job of marrying that. The other thing I'll say is that it to me, in my mind, it's distinguished from the Trent bulky era teams that I felt lost their rank and file. They lost the middle of the team. Bulky was always trying to, you know, hit a home run with an ACL guy, things like that. They didn't really have a rank and file by the end of 2014. They had a lot of star players, Patrick Willis's, Justin Smith's, those guys retired, and all of a sudden there's nobody kind of stepping up to fill that void. The 49ers have a good middle because of what you just described. They're hitting in the fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh round, and sometimes after the draft as well. So, I think that they're going to have troubles like all older teams with a lot of high-priced veterans do, but they do have some youth to sort of form the backbone of the roster.
You need those guys, you know, making not a lot. D'Amino Lenore, that's one I'd forgotten there. There's another.
Fifth rounder, yeah.
Yeah, what would they be doing without him? And it's and Hufanga, I do have that. He wasn't thrilled they took somebody from USC. Like that, they don't have any UCLA guys, do you? Peter is a very proud UCLA former player and alum, but
he had his guy Quantrez Knight, who was an undrafted guy. He was a Bruin, and Peters loved him, and the Cardinals snapped him up off of the practice squad, and now he's an Arizona Cardinal.
Just scour those UCLA Bruin rosters for some people who might end up on the Commanders. I might put it that way. Although, like, if you get like SC guys who weren't coached that well, maybe a few years ago, you get value there. All right, one more question. You got one more, Barros?
Yeah, this is a good one to wrap up on. I just mentioned Trent Baalke, so how can I not mention his counterpart there with the 49ers? This is from Adam Garcia, who writes, since Jim Harbaugh is in the news, how does he compare with Kyle? What ways are they different? How does Jim Harbaugh compare with Kyle Shanahan?
Well, I'm going to say they are probably more similar than you think. You know, not at the podium or on the sidelines. Kyle's a little more buttoned down. Jim can be off the top rope at times, certainly at press conferences. We know Jim is, you know, he is a high profile, high burn rate, high, all these things. Kyle is a little more even keel about all those things. But I think they respect each other. I think we got that from early on when Kyle praised Jim Harbaugh at his hiring presser at the 49ers, which was not allowed for Jim Samsula. He did not praise Jim Harbaugh no matter what. And Kyle went right ahead and said, like, there's been some really great coaches here. Jim Harbaugh and did a lot of here. Harbaugh liked that, told me he liked that. I think there's a physicality in what they believe in and the way these teams play. Obviously, focus on the quarterback position, focus on, you know, offensive guys who have respect for the defense and respect defensive players and coaches. I think there's some similarity there. They're, you know, no bullshit guys. Jim can do a little weird stuff, but it's not bullshit. It's just him kind of being Jim. Kyle is absolutely not a bullshit guy. Isn't out there campaigning for anything. You don't see him doing these big network interviews. You might have to see it in the playoffs, but during the regular season, you don't see those kind of long ass stories on what he's feeling and his emotions and what's burning in his soul. I think there's some similarities there, and I know them both pretty well. And I would highlight that there are some real interesting similarities between those two. There are differences. Barros, I'll let you handle, like, what would you say the differences between those two are?
Well, I mean, the press conferences. I mean, Shanahan will give you just the most wonderful, in-depth answers, where Harbaugh saw a press conference as, you know, a way to parry with the media. He saw it as the, you know, Pete Carroll kind of listening in via the media.
Yes, that's true.
He tried to keep everything top secret. I mean, Harbaugh ran his press conferences like, you know, it was the Cold War and the Russians were, you know, listening in for secrets and stuff like that. And Harbaugh could be really warm and wonderful one day and just cold and distant and combative the next. You didn't know which Jim Harbaugh was going to walk into the presser that day. Shanahan's been the same guy from day one. I mean, he gets a little bit tense sometimes, the topics that I see kind of drawing that out of him are quarterback. Anytime anybody questions
quarterback.
An offensive play, an offensive decision, he does not like it when you question whether, you know, there was a player safety. I mean, the Trey Lance, why are you running Trey Lance so much? That really, I've never seen him get as short and as tense in press conferences as that. And now we know in hindsight that there was a lot behind that. As well, but that's the main difference to me. I did some phone calls probably 10, you know, almost 2 weeks ago about the coaching searches and where Harbaugh might end up. And everybody I talked to said Chargers, because he would find that roster to be very similar to the one that he got in 2011, just in terms of, you know, several kind of nice pieces intact, including a quarterback. And I know that Alex Smith was a free agent when he came in to San Francisco in 2011, but that obviously worked out really well for both sides.
Regenerate a kind of dormant but decent roster. That's what he does. And the Chargers absolutely seems like the right spot. I went on a rant on another podcast about it. What are you afraid of winning? The Chargers know what is best for them. They hire that guy with an executive he can work with. But good question. I do think there's the teams look similar, though, Bears, I would say. Like, the teams are built similarly, kind of the Harbaugh bulky when they were getting along style versus the Shanahan Lynch style. I think their teams do look and feel similarly, you know, built on the lines, solid quarterback play, run the ball, tight ends, and linebackers. Like, these are very important things that these guys believe in, and some other teams simply do not. We've seen the Eagles do not believe in linebackers. I'll keep going back to that. I don't get it. I didn't get it when they were in a Super Bowl. I didn't get it when they were beating the 49ers. I still don't get it. I think you need to invest in linebackers. End of rant. Good questions. Man, we might do this again, Barros. That was pretty good.
Yeah. We get three or four good questions to end on, especially when we have two a weeker like we did this week.
So we might have another one coming up. We'll see. But all good. I appreciate I like to hear what people are thinking about, and I like to make myself think, and I like to see Barros think a little bit. So I don't want him just going on automatic pilot on this podcast. Don't want to see a little bit of creativity out of that guy. And we should say, one difference between Kyle Shanahan and Jim Harbaugh is Kyle Shanahan has never kissed you on the head before.
So, not yet.
Yeah,
not
we'll
yet.
See. We'll see. Hey, we shall see. Hey, it was after a Packers playoff win. That's right. It was after a Packers playoff game where that happened.
Season's not over yet, Tim. I got the head all polished up. It's looking fine.
You're such an irresistible for head coaches sometimes. and general managers, as we know. So, all good. Everybody, that's it. Enough great stuff. Thank you for the questions, and we shall see you next week.